Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
James Fegan covers the White Sox for The Athletic, and he can be found on Twitter at JR Fegan. He is on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. What's up, James?
How's it going?
Wonderfully. Read your latest on Tim, and you indeed did mention some of the silver linings that you could find in the young shortstop's game so far this season. But more importantly, you know, how did we get up to the day where Ricky Renteria needed to sit down Yoan Moncada and Tim Anderson, both of them at the same time?
Probably just more visible signs of frustration than kind of stagnation from them. You know, it was more of a regular sight to see Tim, you know, frustrated after strikeouts last season, or, you know, clattering his helmet into the bat rack or stuff like that. And now it's kind of cropped up again over the couple weeks of June. And, you know, Yoan is always so kind of laconic and laid back that it's hard to tell when he's, you know, really slumping or miserable or anything like that. But I guess Ricky perceived it as well. I mean, he's really he said in Boston that he didn't feel like he was back in sync, and you know, it's been a month now since he came off the disabled list, but it really hasn't clicked in any way or looked the same at the plate the way it looked right before he got hurt. So I could definitely see the argument for sitting. Whether or not sitting is actually anything that brings any real tangible improvement or any refocusing, you know, I'm pretty agnostic about, but I guess we'll see.
Also waiting to figure out how we look at the skill set of Moncada. We talked about it yesterday, too, about the number of pitches that he tries to see, his eye being the difference between selectivity to be selective and selectivity to look for the opportunity to get a pitch. To gamble a little bit, I guess, for lack of a better term. What do you think Moncada needs to learn about how to use what skill he clearly has that just hasn't manifested itself correctly?
I mean, it's a really difficult balance because a guy who can just naturally walk 10% of the time, that's such a steady route to getting on base that you don't want to, like, really take him out of that approach. But at the same time, he's got so much natural swing and miss in his game that, you know, there's an inherent risk of running so many two-strike counts that he's taking, and the fact that he has power and pop, you don't want him to really spit on anything that's in the zone or in his hitting zone early in the count because he has an opportunity to do something on it. And, you know, his walks have kind of fallen drastically over the past month, which makes me feel like he's kind of feeling around for what the right level of aggression is, and it hasn't really clicked in the right way. I think people are probably going to be permanently discontent with him because he's probably going to be a 250 hitter. Even at his prime, just because he strikes out that much and he's not just a big, you know, contact-oriented guy. But I think if the power comes out in a larger way, it's probably going to push some of that concern aside. But it really hasn't come back since his hamstring got tweaked.
Is there alarm in his struggles for you or perhaps from the White Sox front office? Or is this just kind of, you know, within the margins for him?
I say it's within the margins. It's not, like, you know, shocking or anything. This isn't anything close to the talent we expected. I think right now what we're calibrating is whether he can be kind of the league average to above league average hitter, you know, for a 5-6 year period who's great to have up the middle, or if he's really going to be like the superstar, perennial all-star, you know, MVP type player that people were probably promised. And definitely the way things, he hasn't shown a preternatural ability to be really precocious in his adjustments and really kind of locked in the sink in a way that you would expect a top-tier player to be. So I'm probably leaning more towards the former, where he's just, you know, a solid above-average player. And I understand that people will probably freak out for that because they traded a franchise pitcher for him. So, but at the same time, that's a valuable piece to have and definitely a helpful contributor, you know, for years to come.
So if we're looking at a downgraded upside on Lucas Giolito, or at least larger questions, and potentially, as you're describing, a downgraded upside in another spot as well, what does that say about those two franchise-altering moves in retrospect? Anything?
I mean, I think it's been a possibility for a while now that the, you know, the most valuable piece from that Eden trade could be Ronaldo Lopez or Dane Dunning. I think that was, you know, whenever you you have a major trade like that, I think people thought of it as a heist, but you probably have two teams that both think that they're getting rid of assets that might be on the downcline or decline. The White Sox certainly probably had to be aware of the fact that Adam Eaton, played a helter-skelter style and, was at risk of injury. And there's a speed-oriented player entering his, late 20s, early 30s. So that would be something that would be on the decline. And the Nationals, it's been well-publicized that they were kind of out on their ability to fix Giolito and to be coming back to the frontline starter that they, expected him to be originally. So, it's a further testament to just having to stack assets as much as possible. It's a testament to the fact that, Nicky Madrigal is going to be a very important figure in the rebuild, as is their pick the next coming years, because, you can't just, have a bunch of top 100 prospects or a really superficial wave of them and expect them all to be stars and kind of fix things. You have to just kind of keep pumping lottery tickets into the system and hope something clicks and gives you that a franchise player.
There are assets on this team and within this team that may move to hopefully perhaps recoup a franchise type player. I don't know what you think Jose Abreu is worth in trade, but the White Sox have to figure that out at least sooner rather than later. You think those conversations are happening now? Has the calculus changed any on Jose?
I don't really think. Nothing really got moving this offseason, even though there were multiple teams that were really interested and really hunting for it and just got rebuffed away by the price and demands. I don't hold out a lot of optimism that all of a sudden the White Sox are going to lower the price or the market's going to leap up to meet them in some major way, even in a down year for American League first baseman. It's a possibility, but the fact is a 30-year-old first baseman, with even less contract control than he had coming into the offseason is not going to get you a package, even at the level of, say, like Marcelo Zuna got over the offseason. You're going to get like a very, interesting live arm at the front who could be a starter, possibly. You're not going to get someone's best prospect in the organization or not a top 20 prospect, I would say.
Why does Rick Hahn tell us that Eloy Jimenez needs at-bats at AAA? Does he?
He's in a weird kind of micro funk for his level. I don't really think he needs that bat in Double A. I have a conspiracy theory that I haven't explored too much that the Birmingham Barons are hosting the All-Star game next weekend, and that would be a nice little event for him to be at, and then he'll probably be in Charlotte pretty quickly afterwards. But, he's a little bit raw defensively, but I don't see that as being something he could work in at Triple A. He hasn't really super specifically talked about Double A as being an important level for him to clear. He has said that he will need to go to Charlotte, and I just expect that to happen very, very soon.
What about others in that? I guess this season I figured we'd be paying a little bit more attention to, or that we'd have more to pay attention to at the major league level in a developmental way. And yet, you've made your trips through the minor leagues, and I'm sure those were planned and whatnot. But, we're hearing more about Dylan Cease, and rightly so, and Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech than I thought we'd hear about, just given that I figured there'd be more talent, more fun things to look at that 25-man roster level. Is it just a level of how good the prospects have been, coupled with the fact that it's been underwhelming?
I mean, I would say that the start of the season, that the thing to watch for this team was, all the young pieces they're integrating into the starting rotation, which was also the reason I was kind of tamping down on the, maybe they can compete for the second wild card thing, is that they're integrating basically two guys, or three guys, I should say, starting in a rotation for their first full season for the first time. Of those three, really, Ronaldo Lopez is the one holding his own. Lucas Giolito has gone through a myriad of struggles and probably has one of the highest qualifying ERAs in baseball. And Carson Fulmer has been in Charlotte for a month. So I would say that's kind of where things have fallen through as far as the exciting things to watch on a daily basis, is that the young rotation didn't really have much success. And so now at this point, you're kind of watching for what can come next and usurp it. And Michael Kopech is going through a myriad of control problems right now. And beyond that, you're really waiting for Alec Hanson to come back, who hasn't pitched all year. And beyond that, there's Dane Dunning and Dylan Cease. So you just kind of naturally move down the line of seeing who can help the starting pitching issue.
James Fegan, thank you as always. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks for having me.
James Fegan of The Athletic covers the White Sox. Brought to you by Fogo de Chão. Savor authentic Brazilian steakhouse flavors at Fogo de Chão, even on a busy schedule during weekday lunch. Visit their location in Chicago, Rosemont, or Naperville for lunch starting at $15. We have the midday midway coming up already. That got on us fast. I've got an issue for Major League Baseball that is a little bit counterintuitive, perhaps, and also some concerns that we had anticipated regarding the legalization of sports betting here in the United States, and just trying to figure out the actual market economics of it in the global picture.
Got a demotion in the AL Central that went probably much farther than people thought it would, and also a story about fun, not having it, lying about it, and then just manufacturing it. What fun means in the NFL, at least to somebody.
All right, we'll do that on the Midday Midway, next on The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.